Hello, everyone, and welcome to JFG Tonight and the public space on Twitter, soon to be the public space. Wow, what a day, what a crazy day. I was stunned this morning. I was hit by, you know, as a scientist, there is nothing more fun than this, when you get hit by a eureka moment. It's almost what I experienced this morning. As an hypothesis came to my mind with relation to the Pfizer reaction to the Project Veritas release. And I was like, holy shit, that makes way too much sense. And I'm going to share it tonight. Of course, when I'm a journalist, I work very hard to bring you facts. And that's what I fail if I don't do this. It's important to distinguish the work of a journalist and a scientist. And as a scientist, I can bring... people are saying that they are not receiving me on, I'll say, refresh your browsers. If you are on Odyssey, refresh your browsers. You may be missing the live start because there was a bug, but now you should be receiving me. So as a scientist tonight, I'm going to engage on hypothetical. And we're going to see, I have an hypothesis that is very scary, that some of the variants that have existed of COVID, not the first one, it's almost established at this point that it's a lab leak. I have this theory developing in my mind with some support that we could very well see new variants that have emerged as part of the evolution of COVID, as not coming from the world in which they were circulating, but coming from a lab, a second lab release. This is what I'm going to share with you guys tonight, of course, with the understanding that it's an hypothesis, but when I triangulate everything we know and everything that Pfizer just told us, it makes way too much sense. It should be a much less supported hypothesis, in my view. It's scary how supported it seems. Anyways, we're going to talk about this, and while we are on Twitter space, Hitch Slap is our co-host as always. Hitch Slap, how are you doing?
Going very well, JF, but you've been right so many times in the past that I know it's a kind of new hypothesis, but based on your past history, this actually is very concerning because you've been right most times. So Yeah, I'm really looking forward to hearing what you have to say. And a great performance in this space that you're in earlier. I just want to say very briefly that your kind of knowledge of the facts, you were very concise, very cogent, and very articulate. There was a few other people on there kind of waffling on, but you hit the nail on the head so many times so quickly. So I was very, very impressed. So well done for that.
Absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. In fact, the day has been so crazy for me that I almost had forgotten that I wanted to talk about this first. I've had the occasion and the honor to go on the most popular Twitter space in the world that makes 12,000 viewers live, that makes up to 1 million viewers offline. The Mario Nafal Twitter space, the top of the top in terms of so many things, in terms of fairness, in terms of diversity of viewpoint. And I would say also an indirect descendant of blood sports, of internet blood sports. My God, was it great to see this again, to talk to 12,000 people live. And let me tell you, people are fighting to get in line to speak. And it's an annoying show in a way because there are so many experts lined up. They all want to take 5, 10 minutes, 15 minutes, and they tell us stories about, oh yeah, I know this person, and I've been with this person, and I'm very well contacted. And I was like, okay, these people are all ruining the fucking show. I'm sure that Mario Nafal must be pissed inside his heart that he's bringing on all these experts, and they're doing this boring stuff, talking about people they know. And just before I came in, there was a debate around, well, is the black guy from caught in the Project Veritas stuff, is he real or not? And it's not important because Pfizer has released an admission, a massive admission. The first time in the history of human civilization, a company basically is telling us, yeah, we're doing gain-of-function research, but we're trying not to think about it. That way it remains legal. Because if we were to really think about it, what we're doing might be illegal. I mean, it's unbelievable. This press release, I need to come back to it. But so, yeah, I find myself in this lineup of experts and I'm like, okay, I have a show to do tonight. I'm going to do the classic JF, wash the table delivery. Just, I'm going to deliver something in less than 1 minute and a half. And I'm like, okay, it's my turn. I do it. I was nervous throughout because I was losing the speaker status. They were putting in new speakers. And I was like, will I get at least my chance to make a super statement super quick? And you know, because ultimately the crowd retains you on these big shows, they won't retain you because you've spoken to them 5-10 minutes. They don't care. If you can deliver something that's meaningful, that no one else has brought, and you can deliver it in a way that, hey, it's the only thing I'm saying tonight, so retain that from me, that is concentrated autism, as DK Shadow points out. So I said, okay, I'm going to do exactly this. I'm going to deliver concentrated autism. And I pointed out, because for hours before I was given the chance to speak, they were assuming, and especially Dr. Danish was assuming, that this sentence from Pfizer is a full denial of them never engaging in gain-of-function research. I will read the sentence because I had to read it maybe 10 to 20 times before I figured it out. In the ongoing development of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, Pfizer has not conducted gain of research or directed evolution research. Can you guys see it? I will repeat the sentence. In the ongoing development of the Pfizer-BioNTech COVID-19 vaccine, Pfizer has not conducted gain of function or directed evolution research. Would you say that this is a sentence that fully denies doing any gain-of-function research? This is what Dr. Danish was speaking for hours before I was given the chance to speak. Well, guess what? No. It's an incomplete denial. What they're saying is, as part of our development of the vaccine, we didn't do gain-of-function research. So imagine I come to you and I say, I haven't killed anyone yesterday at the bar. Or yesterday at the bar, I haven't killed anyone. I fully deny and strongly deny killing someone at the bar yesterday. That's what they did. That's what they did. They did a partial denial disguised as a full denial, and experts on this Mario Nafal show fell for it. Oh my God! And guess what? Of course, when you do a partial denial, it's with the intent of hiding your actual admission later. And here's the actual admission that they've hidden in their press release. In addition, in vitro resistance selection experiments are undertaken in cells incubated with SARS-CoV-2 and nirmatrelvir in our secure BSL-3 laboratory. By the way, what's the level of security of a BSL-3 laboratory? Almost nothing. A virus will escape a BSL-3 because, in fact, in this pandemic, it seems that a virus has escaped a BSL-4. So if you want to believe that Wuhan was the site of an escaped virus, you're going to have to believe that a BSL-3 is not sufficient security. Because it seems that this pandemic was seeded by a virus coming out of Wuhan that was a BSL-4, which is, BSL-4 is the one where, you know, there's an entry point and you get washed and completely changed at that moment. You receive the steam or whatever gas that they use at the entry. They really eradicate everything that could be onto you. A BSL-3 is a level of lab that I've been working on. They have a positive ventilation pressure, negative ventilation pressure that basically constantly sucks the air out of the lab and toward the chimneys of some kind so they can evacuate them, but with filters. If you get a coronavirus on your shirt on these labs, even if you have PPE, when you remove the PPE, you touch it with your fingers, you put your regular clothes, and then you carry the infectious agent out of the lab. So definitely a BSL-3 lab is a lab where there can be escape. And what they were saying, most importantly, they have done in vitro resistance selection experiments. Those are experiments in which the viruses that are the most resistant survive. The viruses that are the weakest die, and they end up with increasing reinforcement of their resistance. Now, also in the first paragraph, another admission. Working with collaborators, we have conducted research where the original SARS-CoV-2 virus has been used to express the spike protein from new variants of concern. So they take the new spike, they put it in the old virus. Is that gain of function? Yes, it is. You are giving a new function that was evolved in the real world. You're transmitting it back to the original strands for doing your little experiments and for generating your spike proteins. But the virus doesn't care that you're using it to generate spike proteins. As far as the virus is concerned, it can run away, it can do whatever it wants. So an absolute admission here by Pfizer that they haven't used gain of function to develop the vaccine, but they've used gain of function through collaborators to do this, and through their Paxlovid research to do this. And their excuse at the end is, it is important to note that these studies are required by US and global regulators for all antiviral products and are carried out by many companies and academic institutions in the US and around the world, i.e., maybe it's illegal, but the government made us do it. Maybe it's fraud, but the government told us to do it. Maybe it's gain of function, but the government told us to do it. And it's made around the world, and so it doesn't even fall under the US regulatory system. This is what we must understand. This, I cannot believe that Pfizer did this. But this is not a press release of someone who's convinced that the Project Veritas release is bullshit. This is an extremely nervous direction of Pfizer, who think that eventually they could be accused of having conducted extremely dangerous research. And as I'm afraid of, and as I would express as a hypothesis tonight, they could have stemmed a new COVID variant. I cannot believe it, but given the research that they are admitting conducting, and the predictions that I've done back in 2021, I don't think that we can exclude at this point that Pfizer wouldn't be at the source of the Omicron, or that some of their collaborators or government agencies that were collaborating in this whole process of gain-of-function research, that somehow Omicron didn't stem from this. So let's get through it. What I brought on the Mario Nafal show, because I had only 1.5 minutes, I didn't want to fall into these details. I just brought the fact that, hey, gain-of-function research is super poorly defined. And I think it's an intentional thing from politicians. Politicians have defined it in a way that they can claim sometimes it is, sometimes it's not. So Fauci can say, oh no, this wasn't gain-of-function research. But as admitted by a colleague of Fauci himself, Dr. Kanta Subbarao, he says in 2015 in a workshop of the NIAID, in other words, any selection process involving an alteration of genotypes and their resulting phenotypes is considered a type of gain-of-function research, even if the U.S. policy is intended to apply to only a small subset of such work. Working from this definition of gain-of-function, saying, okay, the gain-of-function is very large, and then there's the reason that the law was made may be smaller than this. Like the law may be wanting to target only those viruses that could lead into pandemics. But working just from the basic definition that's given there, in vitro resistance selection experiment. If selection experiments have been run in a way that they were developing resistance, then we have a gain of function. We have an effect on the genes that expresses as a phenotype. And there you go. A full admission by Pfizer that their research fits the bill of an NIH boss view on what is gain-of-function research. T.S. Apostolos says, what is the difference between gain-of-function and serial passaging? Well, I would say serial passaging is this idea of I'm going to apply one process to the virus and then I'm going to pass it through other things. Like I could, for example, want I have the virus from the that looks like SARS-CoV-2. I have it in mice. But in mice, it doesn't target the ACE2 receptor. So what I'm going to do, I can pass it through cell cultures, slowly train it to start liking the ACE2 receptor. And now I find myself with a mice virus, but that is trained and that has been evolutionarily selected to attack the mice ACE2 receptor. I basically made the mice coronavirus more similar to the human one for the purpose of research. So that would be an example of serial passaging. Now, any sort of serial passaging that you do fits within the larger family of gain of function. If you do this to change the virus, that would be gain of function as far as I'm concerned. But again, we are treading in such shifting sands because the experts don't want to set a workable definition for gain of function, because they're very happy with the current context where everyone can deny doing it and yet they can all do it. This is unbelievably dangerous. I wanted to... Okay, this tweet. Okay, I lost it. I wanted to go back to a statement I've done in December 2021 about Omicron. And 7 days after I stated these things about Omicron on Twitter, I got banned from Twitter. That was after leading a career of controversial statements on the public space for 5 years. And I had subscribed to every controversy. I had said everything shocking possible. I had had every guest you could possibly hate if you're a leftist censor. And I was still on Twitter. But 7 days before I was banned, I said this. This is mind-boggling. And that was a comment onto the Omicron genetic structure. Sherlock Noms, who was reporting about the Omicron genetic structure, had said the non-synonymous mutation ratio. These are the mutations that can change the virus over the whole genome of Omicron is 80%. In several other variants, it is under 1%. A new mystery. And I was like, what the fuck? 80%? So to be clear, you'll remember how the genetic code has synonymous codons. So the genetic code works by triplets. Three letters of DNA end up encoding one amino acid in the protein. And these three letters are any letters that go from A, C, G, or T if you're in DNA, and A, C, G, or U if you're in RNA. But the idea is if you got ACC, you get a certain type of amino acid. If you get ACG, you get another type of amino acid. But there are certain triplets who are different at the DNA level. They're different at the RNA level, but they will lead to the same amino acid. I should pull one, but I don't have the time to pull one. You can Google genetic code if you want to know example, but sometimes changing just one letter of DNA won't change the outcome. And that's what we call a synonymous codon. Now, synonymous codons, because they don't matter from the output perspective, they don't change what the protein will be. Synonymous codons They are not significant with respect to natural selection very much, or at least they can be assumed to be very much less subject to selection than non-synonymous codons. In other words, non-synonymous codon, they matter. They change the outcome for the life form. If I go change a non-synonymous codon, I do a non-synonymous change to one of your codons in your DNA, I have much, much more chance to hurt you than if I was just playing from a synonymous codon switch. Because the synonymous codon switch will not change the outcome of your genes. You'll still get the same proteins. There are subtle differences in that certain triplets are slower to translate and transcribe, but those are minimal differences. Basically, everything that is the most evolutionarily significant is, from the perspective of natural selection, is non-synonymous codons. Now, the idea of seeing 80% non-synonymous mutations in Omicron was absolutely mind-blowing to me. How is that possible? I've been looking at genes in humans, monkeys, and you don't get this. You certainly don't get this in mammals. And then I was thinking, maybe you get this in viruses. Well, look at the other variants. They're all under 1%. And so that is quite stunning. Omicron seems special. It seems special in that its evolution has been highly favoring changes to the non-synonymous codon with no trace left in the synonymous codons. What does that mean? Well, to me, as an evolutionist, I think life has to fail many times before it succeeds. Life has to try a lot of things before one of them works. And so the more a virus has evolved, the more I expect the synonymous codons to have changed, to have switched for synonymous mutations that didn't mean anything to the evolution of the virus, but that are kind of a clock on how much the virus has evolved, how much random mutations have occurred, and how much time has passed. It's not a perfect mechanism to conclude this, but it's definitely a bizarre asymmetry. So here were my comments in December 2021, 7 days before getting banned from Twitter. I said, it's mind-boggling. Well, the virus looks like a virus that has close to zero history of mutations, but a lot of advantageous mutations. It's like it was frozen in time a year ago, suddenly got defrozen, and happened to stumble upon the right mutations to survive in the IVAXed environment. So now you start thinking, wow, maybe Omicron comes from so much of the lab work on the Alpha variant, right? But even that doesn't start to explain why so many mutations that matter would be present as compared to mutations that don't matter. This is why I say it's mind-boggling. Omicron appears not only to have won the lotto, it appears to have won it on its first ticket ever bought. You end up thinking not only does one have to invoke some kind of freezing in a lab preserving this virus and then releasing it, you also need to think that this person was actively farming these viruses and influencing their evolution aggressively. I said that looking at the Omicron genome more than a year ago. And so today I was saying in December 2021, 7 days before I got banned from Twitter, I mentioned being dumbfounded by the genetic structure of Omicron with non-synonymous mutations at 80%. Here's a hypothesis. Is it possible that yesterday Pfizer just admitted having created Omicron? In response to the Project Veritas release, they say, yes, we do insert new genetic information into old forms of the virus. When Pfizer does this, do they only change the non-synonymous codons? That would totally explain the bizarre aspects of Omicron. And I go on to also describe, this would also fit very well with the phylogenetic position of Omicron. Because you'll remember there was the Alpha variant that was the first or among the first. I mean, maybe we missed some variants, but certainly Alpha was among the first. And then there was eventually we got to Delta, and Delta was very dominant. And you would have thought, well, if the world is populated by Delta, the next successful virus could be stemming from the Delta branch and creating here another specialty, evolving in another direction. But surprisingly, the Omicron developed from a branch linking closely Alpha, Lambda, Gamma. In other words, Omicron came late into the pandemic and yet was evolutionarily closer to the original viruses of the pandemic rather than the late ones. That is not a demonstration of my hypothesis, but it fits very well. You could think, because Pfizer, when they describe what they do, they say, working with collaborators, we have conducted research where the original SARS-CoV-2 virus has been used to express the spike protein from new variants of concern. So they're taking the new spikes, they're introducing them in the old variants. Could that explain why Omicron shows up with new spike characteristics? Some of them, in fact, are present in Delta, and yet it shows on a skeleton of a virus that looks very much like the initial strands of the pandemic. It fits extremely well. Is it possible that there are lab releases that are multiple? Because here in this pandemic, we already have the lab leak hypothesis, which says which seems very serious, which says the virus has been leaked initially in Wuhan. So that would be one lab leak. Could it be that a second lab leak happens and would explain the Omicron variant? Well, someone was speculating around this back in 2021 also, Yuri Degin. He said, come on, how can you dismiss the potential lab origin of Omicron out of hand? The first SARS escaped from labs at least four times, and Omicron looks very much like a strain would look like if it was passaged repeatedly in the presence of antibodies. I have to concur. It looks like a very trained, a very irregularly evolved life form. And I was seeing this while not even having it in my head that there was a potential lab leak hypothesis for Omicron. I was seeing this in December 2021. There are other things we need to mention. Okay, so there's the explanation from the genetic code. That's a synonymous codon. UCU will give you a serine, but UCC, UCA, UCG will all give you a serine. So those synonymous codons do not matter at the output level for evolution because they will give you the same protein. Non-synonymous codons are examples where a change in one letter, let's say I take the C here and I change it for a U. Well, I'm not producing a serine anymore. I'm producing U, U, U. That sends me to phenylalanine or phenylalanine. I don't know exactly how to pronounce it. Phenylalanine, something like this. So a non-synonymous mutation is much more evolutionarily significant. How is it that Omicron only stacked on the evolutionarily significant mutations with less impact on the evolutionarily insignificant mutations? The general rule in biology is it's very hard to get to something good. Mutations are largely deleterious. That's what people will say. I want also to come to new data just to make sure that I've not misinterpreted stuff from a tweet, because up to now I've just been quoting a tweet saying it's 80% of non-synonymous mutation. Well, we have repeated these observations since then, and in peer-reviewed research, mutational cascade of SARS-CoV-2 leading to evolution and emergence of Omicron variant. This is one article where they are stating, I want to get to the statement, non-synonymous. Delta and Omicron have evolutionarily diverged into distinct phylogroups and do not share a common ancestry, while Omicron shares common ancestry with VOI lambda, and its evolution is mainly derived by the non-synonymous mutations. So, and they go on to characterize the non-synonymous mutations of Omicron. They are massive. Instead of 80%, they say it's, if you include the indels are not single letters of additions, but they are multiple letters of addition. You end up with more than 97% of the mutations were in the coding regions, and the remaining, there's 17,700 mutations in the coding region, and only 558 detected in the extragenic region. So a virus that didn't have much time of evolution. It didn't run in the wild, replicate in the wild with lots of error, but it appears that all of the errors that it did were all the right ones to affect its function. Very weird virus. Another thing that's very weird about the Omicron variant is from Sun et al. Origin and evolutionary analysis of the SARS-CoV-2 Omicron variant. Moreover, the presence of 5 mouse-adapted mutation sites suggests that Omicron may have evolved in a mouse host. Isn't that interesting? Did Pfizer run research in mouse host? Well, if we believe their statement, there's no mention of mouse host, but there is mention of cell cultures. And when you get to what has been submitted at the European Medicines Agency, Science Medicines Health, so for European approval of Paxlovid, you realize that there was mouse cells being used as models, just like they say in their release here. They say in vitro resistance selection experiments are undertaken in cells. They don't say mouse cells, but we know from the European document that Pfizer, that it's most likely mice cells that they are talking about. So Omicron shows the characteristics of having lived for a moment in the mouse. But it doesn't tell you if it lived in a living mouse or if it lived in a mouse cell culture. And Pfizer submitted evidence to the European agency that they ran tests on mice cell cultures. Going further down the same article, see, this is what I've always found bizarre about Omicron. Omicron seems to integrate the best of the best of all the strands. And yet we are being told it emerged from alpha. It emerged from alpha and lambda around the base of the phylogenetic tree. It would have emerged from alpha and lambda. And yet, look at this. In red here, this mutation right here, that's in red. Delta doesn't have it. Gamma has it, beta has it, alpha has it. Oh, interesting. Okay, a mutation that wasn't in the most recent strand, and yet that is in the old strands. That would tell you, okay, Omicron seems to... That would be one argument, putting Omicron at the base of the phylogenetic tree. Perfect. But what about a mutation like this one in red here? K417N. Delta doesn't have it, but alpha doesn't have it either. Only beta and gamma have it. So see, and this one, all of the strands have it. This one, only beta has it. So it seems that Omicron is kind of an assembly of so many IDs that worked in the spike region in so many of the strands. Of course, for a scientist, that's not particularly surprising. That's what they call recombination. So, okay, there could have been a recombination, sexual event of some kind, some piece of genetic material collides with another strand, they kind of connect together. That leads you to have this kind of phenomenon. So you end up having a blurry picture of the ancestry tree. But another totally valid hypothesis, which is why I'm labeling what I say tonight as a hypothesis. Totally valid hypothesis is the recombination didn't happen through chance. It happened here. Working with collaborators, we have conducted research where the original SARS-CoV-2 virus has been used to express the spike protein from new variants of concerns. If they were mixing the new spike coding region with the old virus, and it was all a big orgy of coronavirus modification in labs run on mouse cultures, then should we be surprised that we have emerging from all this a Omicron variant that has all of the modifications of various different strands to which it's not related directly, that has the genetic signature of having had a passage through mouse, and that has 80% of evolutionarily significant rather than non-significant mutations, perhaps a world record in accuracy of mutation. I'm laying out all of this with almost fear in my heart, because it's very rare that I will lay out a new hypothesis. Last time I did this was probably this, the revolutionary phenotype. But I feel that at some point it's your responsibility to just listen. The stack of evidence I've presented is not conclusive and final. But it's certainly putting that hypothesis right there and saying we should study the possibility that through these lab experiments, either through Pfizer, through their collaborators, through their interactions with the governments, that something has escaped a BSL level 3 lab, which is very easy, that could have been born into Omicron. What's my degree of certainty on it? I am not yet competent to give a degree of certainty. What I can say is that I remember my emotion when I was seeing the Omicron variant stem and I looked at its genome in 2021, December, and I was like, this is bizarre. This is like impossible. What the fuck is happening? And this morning, when I read the Pfizer release, I was like, wait a minute. I think I wrote a tweet about this. And then I'm shocked by the realization that I was banned from Twitter 7 days after this tweet. So what I sent a reply to Elon Musk this morning on Twitter. I sent an at to him and I said, Elon, find who banned me from Twitter and why. Is it one of these human resource lady from an educational institution that would have some contact with Pfizer and they would get some funding for the purpose of controlling misinformation on the public space? That would be extremely interesting. Elon, I will tell you right away. If you can tell me who banned me from Twitter, you might be finding facts that will make your most important Twitter release yet. Twitter files. That will be the biggest Twitter files. That someone in 2021 was saying these things. This is mind-boggling. What the fuck is happening? And just for asking questions about what the fuck is happening, I may have been censored by some people of the controlling kind who wanted this theory not to be laid out. Now, this is almost conspiratorial at this level. So I'm going to stop it there and tell you guys, I don't know, what do you think? Perhaps we can speak with each slap Perhaps we can bring in some speakers. I have some news then I want to cover, but that was the big layout that I wanted to do tonight and say, am I crazy here or these facts align just okay? Not like proof, but freaking okay. Hit slap, what's up?
I think you've laid out a very good case there, and very, very interesting. The timing's very suspicious. Are you getting kicked off? Twitter's also very suspicious. Any one thing on its own is not really an indicator, but when you get a lot of things in a cluster, multiple vectors pointing in the same direction, where there's smoke, there's fire, it does tend to lean in that direction. So yeah, you're laying out a very, very strong case. I know you've stated it. It's just the hypothesis at the moment. But especially as I said, getting kicked off Twitter, who kicked you off Twitter, and also the coincidences in the virus. As you've laid them out, I'm having a bit of a mind blown moment. I'm like you. I am like you. I like to rely on a lot of evidence. So still early days, but it's definitely a very, very good hypothesis. That's my summary basically.
All right. So we can start bringing in the people who are requesting to speak. I will warn people today because I've been very annoyed. I have to delete the Twitter space recording every night because there's always just one person who comes in, makes a little edgy statement. I do not want any edgy statements. I want us to be seriously discussing. Don't try to violate the rules. Don't try to make a joke about race or religion, that kind of stuff. I will have to delete every night if there's always a joke like this that shows up. I want to have a serious discussion, so let's get it started. Jared, I see that you are a speaker.
I just want to thank you, Jean-Francois, for having the space and having serious conversations, because I think we need these conversations that are more serious. And I think we should lean away from the more, inflammatory and rambunctious sort of behaviors that a lot of online activists are involved in.
Absolutely. I'm happy to do that. I see that Matthew Elvey is here with a Twitter bio that seems to indicate that he is a hardened defender of ivermectin. How are you doing, Matthew?
So bien. I'm doing well. I loved what you said in the previous space. I think your idea is pretty strong. I mean, I don't think we have anywhere as much evidence that Omicron came out of a lab as we do that the original strain of Wuhan came out of the lab.
I agree.
But it's a good idea.
Absolutely. I should say that with the Wuhan case, we have the foreign cleavage side argument, which seems very unnatural, popping in right inside the virus and a new sequence shows up. We have the documents where they were discussing doing that kind of injection of furin cleavage sites in coronavirus, specifically in the SARS-CoV type. We have also the geographic proximity to the Wuhan Institute for Virology. Those arguments taken together make it a very much stronger case that the lab leak is, at least one event of lab leak, is at the source of the pandemic. I find that my case tonight, that's why I label it a hypothesis, it doesn't have these three elements totally.
Yeah, and I would add to the proximity to the Chinese CDC, and also the specific codon sequences for the amino acids are not what one would expect from a evolving virus.
Absolutely. I agree with that statement. There is something just unnatural and bizarre with the evolution speed here. And Lodazal says, JF, does serial passaging usually result in this high percent of non-synonymous mutations, or would that indicate some other method of gain of function? The serial passaging could be so selective that it creates this effect, but in light of what Pfizer released in their press release, I would tell you that other methods of GOF are to be considered, because they say we introduce new spikes in old frames of the virus. So knowing that they did these more complex methods, The serial passaging only hypothesis does not need to be limited to this. So serial passaging can make such strong natural selection that it will increase the number of impacts on the genome in the places that matter. But would it reach 80%? I don't know. 80% seems pretty high. The 97%, if you include the indel mutations, that seems almost unbelievable from a natural perspective, even a natural perspective in a serial passaging experiment. All right. So I guess that was it for the lineup of speakers. I see that some speakers have disappeared. Perhaps they had their questions answered. If you would like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat. Odyssey Super Chats are my favorite way to receive support for the show. Alternatively, feel free to use Entropy. The link to Entropy is in the description below. Also, we need support on a monthly basis, so go visit the Patreon, the Subscribestar, the Backed By. I have to reconnect to my space as I have to do every night. But we're getting there. We didn't get a robotic noise tonight.
We'll be back in a sec. All right.
I am back. So we don't have a robotic noise problem tonight, but we do have the reconnection problem that keeps showing up. There's still no solution, and I'm a very competent computer guy. Let me tell you guys that I'm trying to find what is causing this reset of Twitter. I still haven't found it, and I've done the round of all possible emulators.
Jean, could it be a possible attack?
No, I would be very surprised. First, I'm very high security on my network. And is it a DDoS? I mean, you can't exclude. Maybe when I pass through an emulator to Twitter, there may be an inherent weakness to it, and perhaps it's not well protected against DDoS. I cannot fully exclude it, but given that it's been happening while...
The Groypers and AF, they really don't like me. So the fact that I could be here as a speaker, I'm not going to rule it out.
Okay. I wouldn't rule it out, but the thing is, I see what's happening. My emulator is resetting the Twitter software. It's like trying to refresh, basically. It's an automated refresh problem, which leads me to believe very unlikely that it would be an attack from the outside. In fact, it seems to be just an inherent defect in the way BlueStacks interacts with Elon Musk's Twitter, and the solution will have to be that Elon Musk has to work on a web version of Twitter Space rather than force us through the Android process. So covering some news, as I was saying before I got disconnected, we need support on a monthly basis. If you'd like to support the show, use the dollar button under the Odyssey chat, or on a monthly basis, join the Patreon, the Subscribestar, or the Backed By. Those are the platforms where you can give a small amount every month to the show. The links to these platforms are all under the Odyssey videos every day. Cloud Warmer says, I remember they said Omicron jumped from human to mouse and back to human, and immunocompromised AIDS patients were at the heart of this. I also remember some people said it was done deliberately, outpace Delta and provide herd immunity. Even that John Campbell guy covered it. I should check his vids. Yeah, I think that with this Pfizer release, you have to ask yourself, does it really matter whether Pfizer intends it to be gain-of-function research? Is it possible that our companies have reached such levels of development that they would engage basically accidentally or unintentionally in gain-of-function research that could eventually turn their way? That is, but basically, the problem is that companies like Pfizer are incentivized at this pandemic happening. And they're incentivized at this pandemic lasting for a long time. And they're incentivized at the vaccine not fully working or needing complete refresh every 3 months. So that is a lot of bad incentives along the way, where to the point where I ask, is it possible that these companies are basically selected and incentivized at not being super competent and almost accidentally do genetic engineering? Jaredo, Matthew, did you have anything to add?
The government is incentivized now to use viruses for their goals, right? Why not? They've proven it to be successful. Whether this was the reason why it happened or not, they proved it's now successful.
Absolutely. And that is very scary. Matthew, did you have anything to add?
I've been mulling over an idea. I think there's a strong argument to be made for eliminating the pharmaceutical industry and replacing it with a government-funded replacement. I mean, no matter how badly the government runs it, it can't be worse than what we have right now, pretty much.
That's very tempting, but I will say, as a libertarian, I take issue.
John,
sorry, Jared.
I have to interrupt for 1 second. My electricity went out.
Okay.
When I was saying what I was saying.
Okay, so I thought you were done.
My whole neighborhood's electricity went out.
Okay.
Halfway through my last sentence. Just now, I just have to tell you, you can hear the dogs barking.
Yes, I can hear them. Something has been happening around you, certainly. I can be certain of that. So you think you think they shut it down?
Yeah.
Okay, Jared. Well, thank you so much for this this crazy hypothesis. I mean, it's the night of crazy hypotheses tonight. Anyway, Canada's Bill C-26, yet another government power grab, apparently a bill in the works in Canada that will basically say, if you are dealing with computer security or telecommunication, and we can designate you as a service or system that is vital, and then basically you have to do whatever we say. So that would be the kind of law in Canada that allows Justin Trudeau to say, well, we have a particular problem with the cybersecurity and Russian agents in general, and you who are giving internet service to Papa JF, you are the problem, and therefore I designate you to give me all of your data to do this, to cut his service, to cut his electricity, cut his network connection. A very worrying system where basically the definitions are so broad that Justin Trudeau could simply decide JF is a problem, let's take out his internet because it's a cybersecurity risk. We must combat this. Thankfully, it hasn't passed through the process, but I'm worried in Canada it might very well make it. Yesterday, there were a Tyree Nichols protests that broke out across the U.S. Protests flared up Friday night across the U.S. following the release of the Tyree Nichols body cam footage. Some demonstrations were peaceful, while others were not. Antifa militants were spotted at some of the marches. Personally, I've not followed super closely, but I don't think we've seen any massive uprising of the level that of the BLM days many years ago. So I think that this will pass, and I think that the analysis of the video has revealed, yes, some wrongdoings. Would I characterize them as murder for the 5 different officers involved? That is a stretch in my view, but there is place for improvement in the police practices as far as I'm concerned. Elon is getting smarter. The Tesla falls, autopilot steering wheel hacked. Tesla Inc. appears to have updated software for its vehicles that attempt to detect a small counterweight on the steering wheel that is used to trick the autopilot system into thinking a driver's hands are on the steering wheel. Holy shit! Elon now allowing the free speech on Twitter, but controlling your attempt at fooling your own Tesla. They were adding some object that made the Tesla believe that they were holding on to the steering wheel. I mean, that's clever when you think about it, because the people who were doing this, most likely it was for the purpose of letting the automated driver system take control of the Tesla, and that would lead to massive danger if they don't pay attention to the road. So very interesting that he found a solution to this through software update. federal food stamps program hits record cost in 2022. Apparently, we are at peak. We are at peak food stamps cost in millions of dollars, $120,000 million. So I guess, what is it? Total cost in million, that would be $120 billion. Is my calculation correct? Well, you guys weren't see. Yes. Yeah, go ahead.
Why does the government that prints the money also need to tax us?
I mean, it's it's an interesting question. I'm not the right guy to defend the system because I hate it. But I guess that if I was to do the devil's advocate thing here and think, what is their justification for it? You would say, if you were just totally printing money, that would be taking money from everyone at the same rate, basically, because inflation hurts anyone else with money. Whereas taxation, the difference with taxation is that taxation targets the economically successful, from whom you can drain more and you will drain more if you're in a socialist state.
Okay, but as we all know, it doesn't work like that. Billionaires don't get taxed at all because they don't own anything.
Yeah.
Right. Like Elon Musk. Elon Musk makes $0 a year.
Yeah.
Right. He just happens to own stock in companies to the point where he can like run those companies. And, but you know, he doesn't own anything.
Absolutely.
But he has like black Amex cards that are connected to those companies. And so if he gets a burger or gets a plane from here to there, or inseminates some weird girl, right?
Yes, absolutely. You
know, but not even through sex. Like they don't even like, you know, like he's like, hey, go to this doctor.
Inseminator robot.
She's gonna get some of this semen. But you know, like maybe they never touched, right?
According Elon's to Barron, Elon paid $11 billion in taxes last year.
Yeah, there's an exception with Elon's life, which is that last year he sells a lot of things because he had transactions to do. In fact, I think at some point he had to sell stocks just to pay taxes. He had to pay more taxes to pay taxes. But what Jaredo has been presenting is still the case for young entrepreneurs who grow a lot in value at the beginning of the rise of their big company. So that is true.
Yeah.
Yes.
All right. But, well, I will say to this, what I was giving is a defense of taxation from the perspective of the leftist ideal. But I think that the leftists would agree that the current society hasn't attained their ideal. Their big dream would be to find a way to grab money from Elon Musk and Jeff Bezos. And Elizabeth Warren is kind of there when she proposes a wealth tax. Whatever you accumulate, you get taxed a certain amount every year.
Yes.
Very dangerous. But yeah, they're thinking about fixing the workaround that you described.
Yes. And Jean-Francois, as you know, because you're brilliant, you know that a free market only exists if you break up monopolies.
That is true. I mean, under a monopoly, there is a possibility that the monopoly will be exploited to constrain people away from freedom. Yeah. I would agree with this. All right, let us talk. I see that there's William in the room and JP. We're going to talk to both of you, and then we're going to conclude the show. Who first? William?
Hi, can you guys hear me?
Yes.
Okay, great. Thanks for bringing me on. I wanted to go back. The last conversations were funny, but I kind of think we got off topic. I was interested in the beginning when you were talking about the, you know, mechanisms of how COVID mutated whether it was natural or likely man-made. And you sound like you have a wealth of knowledge, and I think it was Matthew or somebody else sounded like, you know, you understand it very well. I don't. I don't have a bioengineering background or anything like that. And I've not heard many people speak about it. I've obviously heard everybody discuss it, and I myself think that it was most likely created in the lab and leaked out. But I'm curious if there's, you know, if you guys could perhaps put something together that, you know, hey, here are the markers, here is why we believe, you know, this marker does not naturally mutate this well, you know, from here to here. Has anybody done anything like that, any research, and published it? Or would you guys be willing to put something together?
I mean, I would say that the video I made tonight is the best argument I can do. It's everything that I know to support this hypothesis, I've presented it tonight. Let's say I look at this tweet, for example, with the 80% mutations that are non-synonymous, and the equivalent article that shows that the same has been observed in 2022, looking back at Omicron. So I would say those are arguments, but they are not laid out in the very paper. And I would actually be surprised that a scientist with contacts in the peer-reviewed literature would take the risk of pronouncing a very provocative hypothesis of the kind I did tonight, simply because they would be oppressed, they would be ridiculed, and they really don't have to. They can only stick to the facts and report them, and then it's your job to understand these facts and understand that 97% of the mutation in Omicron being in the coding region, that means something very interesting, and we should learn from that.
Thank you. And yeah, I mean, that's a great point. I think, and again, I'm just coming into this. I guess felt the need to come into a space, and Twitter seemed like the one that was, more willing to allow free speech, obviously, with yes. The acquisition from Elon Musk. So that's why I landed here. And ever since I came into the space not that long ago, I've seen an uptick, right? Doctors who used to be labeled as, you know, disinformation agents and
yes.
Just wrong, and who were banned and you know, knocked out of their, you know, their careers, basically, being labeled fools, basically. But now we're learning after years that this was just not true. So I think this might be a good time to pounce on any theories that we may have and, you know, really find someone who's willing to take the deep dives, has the credentials and accolades to speak truth to it. And I'd love to just know the truth. I just want to know, you know, what's the likeliness of it really being man-made or not, because I don't believe anything that I've heard, you know, from any national accredited media or any scientific community, CDC, anybody like that. Like, I just don't believe it anymore. So I want to hear from somebody outside
Bill
who perhaps
Gates,
hasn't taken that.
Wuhan Labs.
Is that a place to look?
Well, I would say yes. What Elon has done with Twitter will open up the discourse on this, and we can finally have the public discussion. But I will also tell you, you may never get an answer. Because mm-hmm. ultimately, intentionality is what we're after here. We're after, was the engineer of the virus evolution, God, a human being engineer? And ultimately, these three things would do exactly the same thing to the virus. They would try to get it to replicate more. And so at some point, you're going to have to develop a conception, perhaps, if we don't get the answers, that maybe we won't ever know, that maybe the boundaries are so blurred that at this point the virus is using us as a tool to propulsate its evolution, that none of it was intentionally done by Pfizer, but perhaps some of it was accidentally done by Pfizer, and you never know, and they would never know. All of these things are possible.
Jean-François?
Yes?
May I interrupt for a second?
Go ahead.
And agree. Do you, I know you know about the Georgia Guidestones, correct?
Not sure I know about them. What are they?
So there were these stones in Georgia and a piece of land that looked kind of like Stonehenge.
Oh, yeah.
But they were obviously man-made.
Okay.
And there was an edict chiseled into the stone sides, the same edict in, like, I don't know, the top seven languages on the planet, right?
Okay.
And on the English side, it said that we need to, this is not me, but what the stone said, that we need to get the human population down to like 500,000 worldwide.
Okay. Yeah, okay, this I remember me, covering right? this, yeah. This no, is it me. Is not your statement, it was said, just right? written on the stones.
And some investigators, what they found was this was owned by the guy that created CNN. What's the guy's name?
I don't know.
Ted Turner, I think.
Ted Turner, right?
But yeah,
okay. I think he owns the Atlanta. Ted Turner, right?
Yeah, I think that was who and some people proclaim to be that. But
no, I think it's been proven it's his property. It was blown up by some sort of anarchist, and it was taken down, right?
Okay.
Like this is all true. I'm not making any of this up. This is all okay. true, right? But here is where it's important, and here is where it's interesting, is because Ted Turner is a part of all of these groups that are trying to depopulate the planet, right?
Okay.
Well, and they're I'm connected not with.
Here's the thing: I warned people that I wanted this show to be focused, and you're bringing it to a totally different subject that. At times, I will feel confident talking about it, but I don't like giving control of my show on this subject to someone in the audience when I've had a good show tonight. I know that I can keep the recording on Twitter Space, and so I'm removing you as a speaker simply because I don't know where you're headed with this. I don't know what you're going to talk about, and I need to control the show because it's been 3 days that I need to delete my own recording of Twitter Space because there's always a fucking idiot who comes here and does a fucking reference to something I don't want in the show. So much love. Thank you for your contribution, but I don't want any more of it. Truths, Maze Love, William, JP, let's talk to these four people and then close the show. What's up?
Okay. Hi, Gene. Thank you for the space. My question is this, and I'm not sure if, you know, you're in the U.S., so, okay, so we had this whole, pandemic going on, and in my perspective, you know, especially in the U.S., but I think worldwide too, it felt like there was no one organization that had a hold of this pandemic that helps, like, that could take care of it. So, and then now here we are, all these years later, I still feel very insecure. Like, who are we going to look up to? Meaning the balance between bioethics and like the pharma having so much control and all this funding. So as public, right, as a public in the future, we still don't have an entity that will protect, you know, the integrity of the doctors and the experts who can get a hold of a pandemic. So do you see that, we would have that at one point? Because the problem here was like the CDC, the National Health Institute, like the president has no clue about a pandemic. So I felt like, you know, at that time, how would they handle that? Why wouldn't we as a country or the world protect the doctors and the experts on how to handle the pandemic instead of like, you know, what we had? So if you can, you know, help me understand this part. I would really appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah, a very interesting question. I think we must be very wary of not giving control to any institution. And we must go back to tradition. Tradition of families, tradition of tolerance of the fact that there are viruses. We need to go back to acceptance of death. Acceptance that we are part of a cycle. And we're not going to save people up until they're 500 years old and 1,000 years old. So we might as well accept death and stop counting bodies, stop counting the virus killed someone, and rather see life as a cycle in which it's natural to die at the end. That is what we need. We need to focus our lives on things that matter and not this ever technocratic improvement of society. that trust institutions systematically and trust that a savior will come. No savior is coming for you. You're going to die. I'm going to die. We need to accept it and find a nice way to live in the meantime. Live reproductive lives so that at the moment where you die, maybe from coronavirus, maybe from something else, you'll at least have the conviction that you've left something to exist on this earth, your children. That is what I recommend, a complete abandonment of any hope of institutions making sense. And as far as the public discussion by doctors, I think we do need one institution for this, and it's free Twitter. And we're getting it. That is what's amazing. I think that if the pandemic was to re-happen now, or another was to happen, it would go totally a different way with a free discourse on Twitter.
I love that. And I wanted to add, I don't think there's a shortcut to, you know, power corrupts. So we just have to stay cautious. There's plenty of sort of fifth column stuff going on out there. You'll find people putting out garbage ideas that contradict the narrative, but also make anyone who's contradicting the narrative be connected with these absurd theories.
Absolutely. Ridiculed and attacked in all ways. I agree. JP and William, did we hear William?
Yes, you did. Thank you.
Okay. JP, are you able to unmute yourself? Kaneshida. JP Kaneshida. Well, he seems to be stuck in mute mode, so I guess that will be it for our round of the guests, the people.
We have one speaker left, JF, if that's okay.
Who is it?
Maze. Maze is coming late. Maze, okay. Do you have a question or comment for JF? If you do, please unmute and go ahead.
Thank you for having me. Yeah, so I was curious, have you heard of Dr. Huff? He was like a whistleblower who worked with EcoHealth Alliance, and he was talking about how, you know, this did come out of Wuhan. Now, again, to your point, whether or not it was intentionally created is still, there's no evidence to prove that. But anyway, we had him in a space the other day, and one of the things that he said, he's like, this is great that this has everyone's attention, that gain of function is in fact happening and is happening everywhere. He said, but that's not the real issue. And it was like towards the end of the space, the issue is synthetic biology. And I just noticed, you know, that you actually have a background in biology, and I just kind of wanted to get your take on it.
And for those who are on the Odyssey show, they can see the video. I'm holding my book called The Revolutionary Phenotype. This book is a biological theory that explains how humanity is about to cause its own destruction through synthetic genetic modifications of ourselves. I came up with this theory observing DNA and RNA, their interaction 4 billion years ago, what led eventually DNA to win. And I claim that we're about to do the same thing. We're about to create something that will eventually at first modify us, eventually turn us into puppets, and eventually turn us into nothing, and will eventually replace all of us. So I would tell you, read The Revolutionary Phenotype if you want to know how dark the scenario is for humanity. My chapter 12 is the story of what we're about to cause if we use CRISPR, if we start modifying our babies. We must never lose the influence that we have on the genes of our babies. We must never give it to a computer, never give it to a synthetic organism of any kind. We must continue natural reproduction if we want to avoid what happens in my book.
Wow, I'm about to buy it right now. Thank you very much, Gene.
That's what we call a hard sell. Hitslap, how have you been enjoying the show? Did you have anything to add tonight?
Yes, it's been a great show. I'm going to re-listen to it because there's a lot of technicalities in what you were talking about with the virus mutating, etc. So absolutely great show. I just want to, just one question if I can at the end of the show. It's slightly off topic, but I'll keep it brief. There's a lot of kind of bodybuilders and people like this talking about slonking raw eggs, I believe is how they describe it. My understanding has always been that bioavailability is generally highest in cooked food. I know there's a trade-off that when you cook food, you lose some nutrients or whatever. But then they kind of give the counter argument that you can apparently can drink more raw eggs than you can eat cooked eggs, etc. So my question is just around the slonking raw eggs as it relates to vitamins and bioavailability. Better to drink them raw or to eat them cooked? And is there any problems with having them raw? That was my one question. But other than that, great show. And everybody follow JF so you can come to the next Twitter space.
I don't have a position on this, but I've heard all of the argument that you just mentioned. And I never developed a preference or a belief. I'm like, who cares, really? Probably, if you eat any egg, whether it's cooked or not cooked, you're probably getting most of it. And then the slight differences will be in terms of maxing, in terms of very small differences. So I've never cared about this question, and I can't give you guidance on it. Cloud Warmer has sent a super chat. And he said, accidental gain of function. I would absolutely believe this. In the Trinity and Beyond documentary, they discuss how deuterium boosting was miscalculated and Castle Bravo explosion ended up being way too powerful, radius of devastation way too big, and resulted in deaths that were originally in a safe space. Well, stunning. I didn't know about this. I'll be consulting this information. Thank you so much for being with me tonight, everyone, and I'm closing the space. Much love and sleep well. Thank you.